Hey, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. I'm your host, Cedric Youngelman. In this episode, I chat with the most interesting Bitcoiner out there, George Bodine. We dive into his incredible life journey, from growing up in a trailer park to flying F-18s. George opens up about his unshakable Bitcoin conviction, the painful distance it's caused with loved ones, and his deep desire to leave behind generational wealth and wisdom. If you're looking for inspiration and a raw look at what it truly means to live a fulfilling life on a Bitcoin standard, this conversation is for you. Sit down, relax, and get ready to hear the most honest George Bodine interview ever. If you want to get in touch with me, it's Cedric at thebitcoinmatrix.com. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with George Bodine.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
George Bodine, professional artist, ex-oil field worker, cab driver, miner, ex-cop, Navy fighter pilot, Top Gun grad, Delta pilot. No blue check mark equals a scammer. George, you know, I want to read this quote from Lawrence Lepard, the most interesting man. George Bodine is also an airline captain, fitness enthusiast, grandfather, and Bitcoiner. Welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. I just got back from Prague, and I'll tell you something. I was just mentioning, I'm really pumped up, man. I am like on fire. I don't know how anybody could be any like doom or gloom right now. So I'm going to open a beer because guess what? It's about 8 o'clock right now here. And also, you know, another thing too is there's a bad storm going around here around the studio. I drove down to the art studio. I bought a little building years ago, and this is my art studio where I work. And so hopefully we won't have any lightning strikes or anything like that. But, you know, it's a great day to be thinking about, I don't know, Bitcoin.
Sure, fair enough. I want to get to why you're so bullish. But first, I mean, we're probably not too far from each other. We're probably both in Florida. I am in Florida. I'm assuming you are as well. And so we might have some storms tonight. You know, did you grow up in a trailer?
I did. I mean, I spent a lot of time as a kid in a trailer park. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I really had a great time. You know, my mom and dad, they were just great parents. And we lived in a trailer park, moved around quite a bit. But you know what? I just had such a great childhood. I mean, you know, being 8 years old, 10 years old, get on a bicycle and just ride with my buddies all day long, go hike out in the woods, build forts, just, you know, be a pain in the ass. And it was so much fun. It was a great childhood. And yeah, I'm not a bit ashamed of that. I think maybe when I was little, you know, as a kid, sometime you might think, you know, you're living in a trailer park, it might bother you, but you know, it doesn't now. It was just a great life, and I'm really grateful for what my parents gave me.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of questions around that. My parents were New York City public school teachers, so we spent a lot of summers going upstate New York or down in Florida in a pop-up trailer. A lot of summers, you know, and then right now I happen to be in a trailer next to my house, but I just got a trailer. For a lot of reasons. I just had my in-laws stay here, my brother and sister-in-law with their three kids, and I can do the show in here for a little bit and get out of the house, have a little space. But what was it like? Were you in a mobile trailer, or was kind of like where you
No, had- I mean, no. Back in those days, I actually did live, just like I said, in a trailer park for years. And you know, I'll tell you something. I when you were talking about the different things I've done, it does seem kind of silly. But, you know, you have to realize, too, as a young man, I mean, I was really struggling a lot. I couldn't really figure out what I wanted to do in life. And, I'm just really fortunate that, for one thing, I survived all those things. I mean, I had a lot of close calls, and it was really fortunate, especially in the Navy. And, you know, it all worked out at the end. If there's anybody that's listening or watching right now, you know, and maybe you're kind of at loose ends or you're not sure what you're doing in life, just realize that, you know, you can reinvent yourself. And in fact, I think in the coming decade here, that should be like everybody's theme song, because with AI coming, we're all going to have to kind of reinvent ourselves and find different things that we can do to be productive.
Yeah. Well, cheers to that. I'm having a IPA myself.
Yeah, I'm having a beer too, well. But mine, I got to be careful. Mine's foaming over.
So how did you end up as a Top Gun grad?
Well, you know, first off, I always loved flying. I always loved airplanes. In fact, Larry and I were just talking about this the other day, having dinner together. It was in Prague for that conference I was telling you about. Boy, that was a great conference, by the way. That conference just rocked. If anybody's out there and you're thinking about going to a Bitcoin conference, I highly recommend Prague. No shitcoiners, no fucking shitcoiners anywhere allowed. Nobody on stage, nobody up there with their JPEGs or doing any other jackass shit. And no politicians. You know, that was pretty cool. I didn't have to listen to any of that nonsense or have the security issues or any of that other stuff. But anyway, what I was going to say is I've always loved flying. Even when I was like 17, I started flying airplanes, and I was flying them all around the country just trying to get hours and stuff. So I already had a flying background, and, you know, I was kind of like at the end of my rope at one point when I was working underground. It was kind of like the shittiest part of my life in a way. And I remember just kind of thinking, I'm not going anywhere. I'd actually dropped out of high school, and I dropped out of college, and then... So I asked my parents, they were living in Denver, and I said, you know, would you still pay my tuition and let me live in the basement and I could go back to school? And they did. And so I started college again. It just so happens, you know, it's fate, I guess, but the Navy needed pilots. I got in there, and because of my flying background and I was just very driven. I got F-18s, Hornets. And then fortunately, I ended up in Top Gun class for adversary pilots. So I became like an instructor teaching. In those days, we used to pretend we were the Russians, and we'd even speak Russian once in a while over the radio waves, you know, just for fun. And I had that black jet that was in that first Top Gun movie, the one with the red star on it and stuff. It was just a lot of fun. I really enjoyed flying that kind of flying. It was great. So it just lucked out in a way.
Yeah, there's a tweet here from May 20th that you're responding to Natalie Brunel where you wrote, I have some stories about Tom. I think you know that I was a Top Gun pilot. He had gone to Miramar for the first film, but I wasn't there. Nonetheless, when I went through the school shortly after the film was released, there was a lot of stories floating around. So, I mean, do you have any stories about Tom Cruise?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You know that scene in the movie that they filmed in the water where Goose was in the water and then he was there too? That really that turned out pretty. You know, he does all of his stunts. I mean, he was doing his stunts then, and he was in the water, and it kind of got dicey. I mean, they had to put in rescue swimmers to get him, you know, to save him, basically. But, you know, he still went and filmed it and did the scene and everything. What was really funny was that, you know, I was down there. It was right after the movie came out, so you can imagine going through Top Gun then and then going to the O Club, that O Club scene and everything. It was pretty wild. And, yeah, I don't know if I want to talk too much more about that, but it was a pretty wild time.
What did maybe going to Top Gun teach you about life and about Bitcoin?
Well, you know what? One of the funny things about that, most people, you know, one of the biggest things about Top Gun was how to communicate to people. Like, believe it or not, one of the things that you had to decide is you needed to kind of pick a specialty, whether it was a type of weapons, type of training, a type of formation flying, you know, combat tactics. So that was one aspect of it. But, you know, one of the biggest things was just standing up in front of your peers and being able to talk and converse, and also how to deal with egos, you know. As you can imagine, I mean, you get these guys in from the fleet and stuff, and they're selected to go through Top Gun to begin with. I mean, they all had huge egos. At the time, I probably had one that I had to carry around in a wheelbarrow. So you're just trying to manage that and keep everybody in check because, you know, you're also trying to teach people, and it's really hard. I'm sure you've noticed yourself. I mean, it's Bitcoin is a very difficult thing to get across to people. And I don't do really well at it. I'm not good at orange pilling people. I've noticed that a lot of people seem to be much more successful at it than I am. And I'm not sure why, but I'm still trying.
So maybe what happened after Top Gun? It says here cab driver, ex-cop. My dad went through a lot of jobs before he kind of figured things out in terms of what he would do to, you know, support the family. So he was even a cab driver for a minute. I think he got into like one little fender bender and he left the car. I don't even think he went back to bringing the car back. But what was it like being maybe a cab driver?
Well, you know, I drove cab when I went back to school when I was living with my parents. And it was actually a really good job. I mean, in the sense that you could make a lot of cash. And I really hustled. I'd work 12, 14 hours in a shift. I was working in Five Points in Denver, which is a really nasty area. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. But nonetheless, I made good money at it. And in those days, you know, but I mean, it's hard to imagine, but there were no digital maps or anything. I actually had a big map, and I had to learn all the streets in Denver so that if somebody would call me or I'd get on with the dispatcher, you know, I mean, he'd send me somewhere, and I'd have to figure it out. And, you know, it's really funny to try, and I was lost a lot. But finally, I got to know that city like back of my hand. You know, there are all these different ways to make money and hustle and stuff, and that was just one of them. It really helped me and I'm glad I got through that okay and everything. I always had a weapon with me when I was driving a cab. And in those days, they didn't have concealed carry permits and stuff. But I usually carried a weapon too.
Sure. And what about, I guess you probably carried a weapon when you were a cop.
Yeah, plenty of weapons. Sometimes, actually, I had two weapons with me. I had one strapped on my ankle too. But yeah, you're right.
And so what was that like? How'd you end up becoming a cop? Was that something you thought you'd ever become? And
you know, I when I dropped out of when I dropped out of college, I was up at Wyoming there, and it was in a kind of a hard drinking college there, the University of Wyoming. But at the same time, it was right back in the 70s, and we had a tremendous desire, need, thirst for oil. And I mean to tell you, the oil fields were booming. And I ended up getting a job out on the western side there and drifted across to the western side of Wyoming and worked in the oil fields there all the way down into Vernal, Utah. And it was great, you know, great pay. But before I left Laramie, I had dropped off a city police application. I don't know why. And they ended up calling me. I was in the oil fields. And I'm going to tell you something that, you know, they called me right in the middle of winter. And I mean, the job I had was we were perforating these wells. So, you know, you'd get a big tube of explosives and you send it down the well head and then blow it up at different depths and stuff. But you had to climb on board these way up these tall towers. And then you'd get up there and you'd try and guide the tube while it was swaying in the wind. And it was wintertime. It's like 20 degrees and it's always windy in Wyoming. I was trying to guide those little things into the tube, you know, and water all over the place. And, you know, after a year of that or so, I'd had enough. And so they just happened to call at the right time. I thought, yeah, I'm out of here. And that's how I got into being a city cop there. And, you know, that was back in the cowboys and Indians. I mean, real ones. They actually had real cowboys and Indians there. I remember I went to a bar one time as a cop. There was a fight or something, and we couldn't go in the bar by ourselves without backup. I mean, they'd kick the shit out of you. And there was these cowboys in there and stuff. And one of them had a horse. This is a true story. He had his horse tied up to the bar in downtown. You know, it was sitting out there, the horse. And when I went in, there were bullet holes in these bars, some of them. So that was a really interesting time. And, you know, I'm glad I did that and stuff. And, you got to focus on, like I said, I really want people to take away from anything I say here that, you know, it's up to you where you go with this journey that you're on with Bitcoin, because we are going to have some real challenges coming up here in the future. And, you know, we've seen them already and we've been through a lot, but there are going to be a lot of challenges for Bitcoiners. And, you know, I don't know where everybody's road or path is going to take them, but I do know you just got to keep pushing forward. You know, you got to keep trying no matter what's happening and keep stacking and keep getting the Bitcoin.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of want to. So you've lived in a lot of different places, as of I actually. And so in terms of maybe Bitcoin and a Bitcoiner's journey and maybe being far enough along to have kind of like control of your time. I have a few questions about geography. What is really maybe stuck with you, or, you know, is there a part of the country that, I mean, is there a reason you're in Florida now and not Wyoming or California? And
actually, I'm not down in Florida right now. I'm out in the Midwest. That's where I ended up with Delta, my last base. And I've been down in Florida a lot and travel a lot down there. And of course, you're thinking with Larry and stuff, but I'm not down there right now. I'm in the Midwest. But yeah, I love being out west. I've always loved that. After I left the police department, I drifted down across the plains in Colorado in the high northern plains there, and I ended up working underground in a mine, like you mentioned, and I just fell in love with it. I do love being out west. I'm going to head out to Colorado, do some hiking and some pre-scouting for I got drawn for an elk tag again this year. I hunt with a bow every year, so I'm going to go out west and spend some time out in Colorado and check out the countryside and stuff. But I just love it out there.
Okay. And you were just in Prague, and BTC Chick, she just tweeted out that saving in Bitcoin represents not only preserving value, but also reclaiming time and gaining the freedom to dedicate it to what truly matters. And for you, that purpose is art. So what does it mean for you to be an artist? And what kind of art do you work on? Then maybe we could talk about a little bit about Bitcoin art.
Well, if anybody just types my name, George Bodine, into Google, you'll see the work that I do. It'll be the first thing that comes up. But when I was in Prague, I don't usually discuss models or anything, but BTC Chick said it was fine. In fact, she actually made a video of the shoot. Somebody was there and did a video of the actual photo shoot we did. And I'm probably going to produce some paintings from different references that I have, both with her and in Prague. In fact, I've already started working today in the studio. And it's kind of nice because I've really been, I've been struggling mentally a little bit with a block. I just couldn't really get into it. So now I'm on fire. I'm all pumped up. I'm ready to go. I'm going to put some really great work out there. You know, I highly encourage it. It's not so much about what I'm doing. You know, I mean, you can see the work behind me. In fact, hey, you know something, Cedric, I got that painting of Dorian Nakamoto behind me, you know, the CEO of Bitcoin, and that's mining Bitcoin right now. If you can look at the bottom there, it's got a little miner there, one of those little BitX miners, and he's mining Bitcoin for me right now. I checked it, in fact, when I came to the studio to make sure I hadn't won a block. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, I've been posting things about what I call the Bitcoin life. And, you know, I think you, myself, I think all of us that are stacking Bitcoin and have been working at this for a long time, we are going to see over the next year or two just a tremendous change in wealth. And a lot of people are going to be in a position where they're going to have to figure out what they want to do in life. And that's important. And it's important to have some kind of creative outlet. I don't know what you like to do. Sometimes it's writing. Sometimes it's, you know, woodworking. But people need to start thinking a little bit about what they're going to do in life to keep themselves busy and also to be creative. You know, these paintings, if you look behind me, you know, I like that one of the nude that's above my head here. You know, that was done on traditional Belgian linen with hot rabbit skin glue, the same technique that Da Vinci or Michelangelo used. That painting will be there for 200-300 years without even being cleaned. So, you know, it's nice to be thinking that you're going to produce something that lasts. Probably the most important thing you can do is to do something that is in your bloodline. And when I talk about generational wealth, I mean, I'm serious when I say people are going to close out their bloodlines here. You know, Arthur Hayes just came out, the co-founder of BitMEX. He just came out and updated his forecast for $1 million a coin by 2028. ARK just updated theirs about 2 months ago to 2.4 million, I believe it was, by 2030. I mean, this is going to happen. It's inevitable. And so people are going to, and, you know, it's not going to stop there. I'm glad that Michael Saylor finally came. I'm glad that he updated his numbers because, quite frankly, I thought that was really low, what he had there on the base case. So I'm really glad that he upped it.
Right. You tweeted out the Bitcoin life, sound on and dream with me today. I want you to feel what it likes to be free, to have time stretch out before you, to live your dreams and pursue what interests you. I live that life now. This is the life I want for you. It's coming your way. So let's talk a little bit more about what is the Bitcoin life? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate because obviously, I'm older. I'm probably one of the older people in Bitcoin space that I meet. But what was good about that was, and I don't know why, but I understood Bitcoin early enough that I could take all of my wealth and just put it into Bitcoin. So I've had a chance to see now over the years what that does to you. And that's coming for everyone that's hodling Bitcoin. I mean, if you have any significant amount of Bitcoin, I say if you can get to a tenth of a Bitcoin, you will see this. Now, obviously, that's spoken for someone who's younger than myself. But for somebody that's younger than myself, yeah, you are going to see that. You are going to see generational wealth. So again, just getting back to what I was saying, you kind of have to figure out what you're going to do in life. And you can't be sitting around on this generational wealth eating donuts. You got to go out and do something. And even if you're stacking, even now for myself, I still do things. I'm still interested in life. I'm still learning. I'm still challenging myself. I just took up scuba diving. I'm going to get back into flying. I lost my medical years ago. I had a really bad motorcycle accident and a brain injury. So I'm fortunate that I survived that and I'm here. But I'm going to get back into that. And when I talk about this thing, the Bitcoin life, what I'm trying to say is this. Time will stretch out for you. It's changing for me. I'm not on a hamster wheel. I don't feel pressured. I'm in galleries around the country, but quite frankly, I really don't give a shit if I ever sell another painting. I don't have to. I can do what I want. And it's a great feeling to be free like that. And time is such a precious thing, especially if you get older like I am and you can see the horizon out there. You know where it is. It's coming my way. For all the people that are younger than myself, you're going to have an incredible journey in front of you. It's going to be a magical journey for those who are actually in Bitcoin. It may be difficult for other people, but if you just stay focused, stay humble, stack sats, at some point you're going to be like me. You're just going to be sitting here going, I'm off the hamster wheel. I can do what I want in life. I can travel if I want to. I can help people. At some point we're going to have people with so much wealth, Cedric, that they're going to be able to form Fediment banks if they want to and change the course of history for a village somewhere in Africa or a region or bring water to places. I mean, there are so many things that are in front of us here on this Bitcoin standard that's coming.
Yeah, you kind of went on to write, this is a question you'll have to answer in the next few years. Look past all the noise today, see your future and what you want. Very soon, the nature of time itself will change for you. It will stretch out. You will not be the same. Sound on and dream this life with me, pleb. It's coming. So maybe two questions around that, maybe focused on Bitcoiners, though. First, what would be your advice to people who are, grinding it out still? And you've worked a lot of different jobs. Maybe not every hour in each job was meaningful. Maybe some were. All those experiences do add up, though. So when I say they're not meaningful, I'm not trying to say they're not part of the journey, right? But you might feel like you're, sweeping a floor for someone who doesn't care, or whatever it might be. But you got to grind out. You got to get to where you want to go. What would be your words of what would you say to people who are still grinding?
Yeah, that's well put, Cedric. You're right, because that is part of the journey. And yeah, I've even flipped burgers and stuff. I'm not saying these things were fun. That job underground just sucked. I worked as far as 10,000 feet. That's almost 2 miles down. And down there, the world just sucks. There's no other word for it. And all around you can hear, you can feel the earth creaking. And, sometimes there's almost sounds like a shotgun going off. Like if you've ever been on a lake, frozen lake at night and it cracks, And what are you doing? So what are you doing that whole time? You're working for a wage. And that's all I've been. I've been an 80 IQ pleb just working for a wage. There are so many people in this Bitcoin space that are building things, doing things, different projects. And, I've just been a worker. And so you know, what I learned about Bitcoin was I could work my ass off. I could have stayed down there in that mine. And I made good money down there, as you can imagine. I mean, it was, you know, they paid you well for a reason. Well, guess what? I could have stayed down there. And at the end of 30 or 40 years, yeah, I could have saved up some money. But the bottom line is, now that I understand what mouse click money is, thank you, Larry Lepard. That is a great line. Now that I understand what mouse click money is, now that I realize that all my work can be dissipated, debased with just the click of a mouse. And, you know, look at what happened after post-COVID, the 5 years afterwards, what we printed, the amount of money that was in the system, approximately 40%. Well, you know what? That's all the savings. That's everything that you were working for, gone. But at the same time, I do think that this is the transition period. I want people to understand that, you know, this, it's really happening, and you have a limited time. It's a limited time where you're going to be able to get any appreciable amount of Bitcoin. I mean, just look at what's happened in the last few years. You know, back in 22, I got Bitcoin at like $16,000-$17,000 a coin. You know, and I remember I said a tenth of a Bitcoin, I think, is a game changer. Well, guess what? You know, for $1,700, I could get a tenth of a Bitcoin. Now it's going to cost me a lot more, $10,000. And soon it's going to be $100,000 to get that same amount. So I'm going to say something that may sound, especially since I said life is short and time is precious. You know, if you have a job right now, and maybe it sucks, but it's paying well, for me, if I were in that position and I were young, I would just put my head down, just like I did when I was working in that fucking mine. I'd put my head down, and I'd just keep one foot in front of the other, and I'd keep stacking fiat cuck bucks, and I'd turn it into Bitcoin as fast as I could. And not financial advice. Again, you've already highlighted the fact that I don't have any financial background, none. And, you know, I've had a brain injury to boot, so, I mean, I don't know. You know, what I'm trying to say, Cedric, is I think this is a really important time right now. We are going through a transition, and we're going to see it. You know, I'm, you know, Larry said I'm a fitness buff. Well, one of the reasons is I'm working out all the time is I just want to be around long enough to see this. I want to see you kids. I want to see these people, you know, I want to see them win for a change. And I think it'll happen.
Yeah, I think so. So what would maybe be, and maybe you've thought about this, you know, you've gotten your time back. So some people express that you bought your time back, or you've earned your time back, or, you know, you could just do what you want. Have you ever contemplated, you know, what if, and it could be for any reason, and we're talking about here, I'm alluding to Bitcoiners that are ahead of the curve, that might be lucky enough to be ahead of the curve here, whether they have the 0.1 now, and they'll still be very young when that's very valuable, or maybe they're, you know, they have a nice stack now and they're ahead of the curve. But if you had, say, walked out of Top Gun and either the country had either let you stack sats then, you know, maybe Bitcoin was around and pretending, or they paid you in Bitcoin, or you just walked out with the money that you would think a Top Gun cadet should have at that, you know, for the value they produce, whatever. And you didn't have to, like, say, work for the rest of your life at a young age, right? If you were a young Bitcoiner, you know, however you want to paint the picture, what would you do with your time if you were 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, you know, 50 years old, and a Bitcoiner that was set?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. That is the question, isn't it? Because what did I just say? In my mind, that's coming. So, you know, I was just fortunate in the sense that, and, you know, I mean, that was not easy to get the wealth that I had by the time I put all my chips in. I mean, it wasn't. It was a pain in the ass. I, my company went bankrupt at one point. I had a 50% pay cut. My pension was stolen. You know, something personally happened really bad to me. And, you know, I was just kind of like at the end of my rope. And I didn't have much money at all. And, you know, I started realizing that nobody was going to save me. Nobody was coming along except me. And so I just started studying my ass off. I mean, I studied constantly about finance, how to create wealth in those days. You know, this is back around 2005, 2006. And I just kept my head down and kept doing it. And then by 2008, the great financial crisis came. You know, that sucked. I mean, I saw people on my street, you know, out on the street. I mean, I saw people's furniture put out of their house, and it was a tough time. And I just kept working hard and stuff. But, you know, finally, I got to a point. I was very fortunate because just at the time when I discovered Bitcoin, I had enough that I could just put it in and do that. But this is coming for all these people that you just mentioned. You just said 25, 35, 40. Well, it's going to happen. I can't answer that question for these people. You're going to have to come up with it yourself, and it's not easy. You know, again, I said you can't sit on your ass and eat donuts because you're going to find out that the life that you're living is not going to be very fulfilling. You got to have something, whether it's writing, whether it's helping other people, whether it's doing something creative, woodworking. You know, I've mentioned this before, but I had a plumber in my house one time, and I realized that the guy was an artist. I mean, he was an artisan. You can be an artisan in many different fields. And you can also, you know, start to travel. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to travel and to really be able to just kind of interact with people and try to learn about the culture and not feel like just a tourist that's scraping along on the outside. So all these great adventures are coming. They're coming your way. And everybody is going to have to do that introspective look inside and find out what it is you want to do for the rest of your life.
Sure. You tweeted recently, and let's talk about fear. You tweeted, "Don't be afraid. You'll never get to enjoy the freedom Bitcoin is going to give you if you are afraid. You have to live fully because life is short, my fellow pleb. Keep stacking, but when you have enough, don't put things off." There is a funny story on why he is circling me. So before I ask you about, I think, why the shark is circling you, like, I mean, you've lived with, you've been through a lot of what some people might think are scary sort of jobs, you know, situations, right? Working deep in under the ground or going into like tough bars and tough towns as a cop, you know, being a cab driver in the worst part of town, you know, going through some tough life situations. What, I mean, how do you go through life not being afraid? Or what would you say to people who, you know, maybe are, you know, not going through life feeling like they're in first class of the plane ride, drinking, you know, a martini or gin and tonic, but they feel like maybe they're outside on the wing holding on for dear life, you know, until the plane lands, and that's how they go through life. Like, what would you say?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. You know, there are a lot of people on that latter example. There are a lot of people out on that wing right now. It's a really tough time. And I do think that it's going to get a little bit more tough, like a little more volatile, I should say. You know, I don't know if you follow a Neil Howe and Strauss, if you've read The Fourth Turning. You know, I'm just going through that book again. And I don't necessarily agree with everything they say. And for the viewers right now, if you're not familiar with it, it's a discussion around like a cycle theory, a cycle of about 80, maybe out to 100 years called the seculum. And really based upon the ancient Etruscans, which were the forebearers to the Romans. But it's the idea that it matches a long-lived life. And there are different periods in that you know, cycle. I think it's the high and the awakening, the crisis, the unraveling and the crisis. And right now, we are in, if you follow this theory, we are in the fourth turning, which is crisis. And probably started with the great financial crisis, which I mentioned earlier. And it usually lasts for about 20, 25 years. If you look at our country's history, the first one was in 1776. In fact, they actually followed all the way to the settlers in America. But, you know, if you just look back at the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and then World War II, and then today, they follow that kind of that pattern. World War I's not included because the end of this crisis, one of the caveats is it has to be the start of a new era. And World War II was that defining moment. Actually, it really started with the Great Depression, but then through World War II. So they're very difficult periods, as you can see. One of the things that I disagree with or that I push back is that they base this in particular upon U.S. history. And they say that one of the reasons is because it's pretty neat when you think about this as an experiment, that, you know, they came here, these new people onto this land with a very different mindset about time. And they viewed it in a linear fashion, which is a very European-centric way to view time. Unlike the Native Americans that were here, who actually realized that time was more like a circle for them, you know, the four winds, the four poles. So one of the things that's interesting is that if you follow this cycle theory, these crises are actually really good for the country, meaning at the end of it, when you come through on the other side, it's a very positive period that, you know, it's almost like a cleansing, a reset, if you will. There's another gentleman, Spangler, who came up with an opposing view to that, and it's called Decline of the West, his book. And that's a very good book to read, too. And basically, he says, just think of like the Roman Empire. These empires that Howe and Strauss are discussing, they don't always go and leapfrog into a new era that is a better era. Sometimes they just decline. Sometimes they just fall apart. I'm not saying that's going to happen to our country, and I don't want to be a doom and gloom guy, because that's not how I feel. Right now I'm very positive, very excited for the future. It's just that I want people to be aware that there are going to be some volatile periods. You know, I can't help people get through fear. You know, I've been afraid for periods of time that, you know, especially landing on the carrier at night was probably one of the toughest. But, you know, you just have to get through that. And what I mean is, as you go through life, the more that you get through those events, you just kind of get stronger. You know, all these tough times, you know, even the times that people are going through right now, and people are going through some really tough times right now. I mean, this is a difficult period. You know, I don't know if you follow the Michigan index of consumer sentiment, but, you know, that thing is in the tank. It's toilet right now. And, you know, they could, that before people poo-poo that because it's just consumers that they contact, you know, you should realize that 70% of our economy almost is consumer-driven. So the sentiment does matter. And surprisingly enough, in 1974, and I was around, I was a young man then, I remember it really well. You know, everybody thought things were roses and everything was going great. You know, TV sales were up, cars were selling, everything was selling. And that consumer report, that sentiment report came out and said, no, you know, we're headed for trouble, recession basically. And they were right. And nobody saw that. None of the economists, none of the advisors. And boy, this is already, I'm starting to get back in the doom and gloom. Let's just stay focused on what I said. These periods of volatility and difficult times you're going through, they will help you. You will come out stronger on the other side. And when it gets really difficult, all you have to do is just try to think to yourself, just get one foot in front of the other. Just, you know, just get through the next. I remember in one really bad time in my life, I mean, I just would get through the next 5 minutes. I mean, I remember looking at a clock on the wall. I got one up there on the studio. And looking at the clock and thinking, you know, I just got to get through the next 5 minutes. And then, you know, it stretches out. And then, you know, sometimes it would be like, I just got to get through this afternoon, make it to dinner. Everything will be fine. And I did. And it's not always fear. It's just a question of just keep going. You know, Cedric, just keep going.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Judaic way of looking at time kind of combines the two that you mentioned, where it's kind of looking at time as a spiral. So it's circular, but it progresses in a linear fashion. So things kind of repeat itself, but, you know, keeps moving through and can kind of be new. What's the funny story about maybe the shark, I think, circling you?
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I told you I wanted to, you know, I'm always trying to do new things and learn new stuff. So I thought I'd take up scuba diving. And I went down there last year to get recertified because I'd been like a lot of years. And so I went there and I was having a great time. And we were down about 45, 50 feet. And we were diving down to this barge, getting deeper and deeper. And everything was going great. I was with about five or six people, and I noticed a shark came up to me. And, you know, you don't see a lot of them under there. He was only about 5 foot long, but nonetheless, I mean, just, you know, a shark coming around. And what was weird was he was circling everybody, and actually me in particular. And I thought, what the hell's going on here? Next thing you know, there's like a bunch, his buddies show up. So there's like about five or six of them, and they're circling us as we're going down. And I thought, man, this is kind of weird. And I was watching, we had a dive master. He was the guy that was supposed to lead us down to the barge, you know, that we could go there. And he was looking around the sharks and stuff, but I thought, well, everything's fine. And what I didn't know, he had a spear gun with him. And I remember seeing him looking over, like he was checking out where the sharks were. And as soon as he saw that the sharks maybe weren't looking at him or something, he reached down real quick and he shot what is called a lionfish. They're like a parasite on the reef, if you will. They're really damaging the reefs, and they're not native. And so he shot it, and I saw him. I mean, I saw it strike the fish, and I thought, wow. And I looked over, and he put that spear, and he put his flippers on either side of that fish, and he pulled the spear out like this, boom. And when he did, that shark went right in front of me there, turned like this, and his mouth opened up, and he went right by my face down to that fish and hit it. And I saw his eyes roll back, and, you know, and I could hear him. He was crunching underwater. I could hear, and I saw the gills come out, you know, splatter all over. And I thought, oh, my God. Well, come to find out, the reason those sharks were there is because that idiot, that master diver, was going down there. And on these dives, he was shooting these fish once in a while. And when I went back this year, guess what? They stopped that. They stopped. They weren't doing that anymore. So there is a funny story.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. So then you also tweeted out, I mean, here you are, I think, with an elk tag, drawing an elk tag.
What, yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, tell me.
I'm pumped. I mean, I tell you, I just love, I can't tell you what that feels like. That's another thing to challenge yourself with. You know, we're meant to eat meat. I like to eat meat. We have these teeth. I got a gold tooth over here on this one. But these eye teeth, that's what, you know, they're canine teeth. They're here to eat meat. And so I like to go hunting for elk. I've killed elk before with a rifle, but I'm hunting with a bow, and it's really challenging. With a bow, I mean, you've got to get in close. Like within 20 yards is really good. And so, you know, you call them in. And when I go back there, I actually put on a backpack. I put on my bow. I strap it on my back. I go hiking in the backcountry by myself usually. Sometimes a buddy will show up with me, and he'll stop by once in a while and stuff. But often I'm the only person in that valley, 5 miles. I've been in that 5 mile valley all by myself. And it's pretty cool when you think that you're just out in the woods with a bow, hiking up and down the mountains, chasing these elk, calling to them. I mean, it'll definitely, you'll be in the rut yourself by the time you're done with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look pretty badass in this photo that you tweeted. Just to read this whole thing. Yeah, this is another thing that Bitcoin has given me over the years. I hunt with a bow. You have to call an elk in close to be successful. This is one of the most challenging things I do yearly. It is extreme, up mountains at high altitude, crossing shale, rivers, packing in and packing out. Many night, I walk back in moonlight through aspen to my tent, and often I'm the sole person in this 5 mile long valley I backpack into. In training now, wish me luck, and for the great spirit to find me worthy.
Yeah, wish me luck, bud.
Yeah, man. And then you tweeted, you tweeted, do you know where the term plebs come from? So I want to ask you, where does that come from?
You know, I just love Roman history. I don't know if you're like me, but I don't know what it is about Roman history. I just finished Rubicon by, I think that's Tom Holland. Excellent book. And, you know, I've read several about the, you know, rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And that is a term, you know, plebiscite from the Roman Empire. It means kind of like the common person, a street person, or someone that's not just a pleb like myself, you know, and an ordinary person that, you know, was really the backbone of the Roman Empire. Because you had to be a citizen to serve in the army. You had to be a citizen. And so, yeah, I'm fascinated by Roman history. You know, I'll tell you a funny thing about Rome that a lot of people don't realize is that it ended, the Roman Empire ended like in 476 AD. It might have stretched on in the Eastern Empire, but really that was the end of the Roman Empire. Well, you know, within like 100, 150 years, so the ruins were still there. You know, it was sacked by the Visigoths, and it was sacked. I mean, it was, you know, plundered. But the buildings were still there. The aqueducts still, and the Roman roads were still there. The people that lived there, by the 100, 150 years, they had no idea what they were living in. They couldn't even comprehend. There was no written language at that point, no history. And they even attributed some of these to like magic giants that had built these things. And so, you know, history has a lot to teach you as a Bitcoiner. And time is circular, like you said, in my mind. It's not just linear. And, you know, we can look back on history and we see how often it rhymes with where we are today.
Yeah, for sure. And so you wrote, it comes from the Latin word plebs, meaning common people or lower classes in ancient Rome. I am a pleb. We are often viewed as slow, stupid, working stiffs. I grew up young in a trailer park. My dad was a pleb, never went to college. He worked all his life for someone else, yet he was a noble man, uneducated, but he read voraciously. He even working for NASA as an electrical engineer. Bitcoin is the single greatest equalizer to wealth inequality in the history of mankind. We are front running these pricks. Don't let BlackRock buy your Bitcoin right now. We are going higher, and all the smart money knows it. They're hoping you won't see it. It's interesting with plebs, though. It's the word, you know, calling ourselves pleb. I think on one hand, it thinks, you know, it speaks to we're all sort of equal in this sort of battle or this journey or this thing called life, and we're all sort of. I really like that and vibe that. But then there's a part where it's like, well, I don't really want to be a pleb in the sense of, you know, stupid working stiff maybe, or you don't seem like a pleb in the sense that you bought your time back, or you have FU money, or you can do what you want. So how do you sort of deal with that dichotomy, or you think about that?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if I've really thought about that before. Yeah, I don't know, Cedric. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, I do consider myself just a, maybe not a working stiff anymore. I mean, although, you know what? That's not true. I mean, I like to work. I I'm always doing stuff. I like to keep busy. I like to do things. And, you know, I don't consider myself, you know, I told you I had a huge ego at one time. Well, that period that I went through back in the mid-2000s, that period there humbled me. And I mean, I lost my ego. And it's a wonderful thing. That's just a gift from God, man, to be sitting here and not feel like you're superior to someone else. And it helps you when you listen to people. I know I'm talking a lot tonight, but, in real life, like in the IRL, in real life, you know, I like to listen to people. I really want to hear their stories. One of the things I enjoyed so much about Prague was I got to just kind of walk around and people would come up to me and they'd start talking to me and tell me they're all about their story and their, you know, how they were orange-pilled and what they wanted in life and their dreams and hopes. It was really cool. And, you know, if you have a good base like that, if you're just a good person, you know, it doesn't really matter how much wealth you have or how much time you have. I will say that health is greater than wealth. I mean, if anybody doesn't understand that, they've never faced a health crisis. If you ever face that, if you ever wake up one morning and you think things are going to be very different, I mean, I remember one time going in on the table and they were going to do a MRI on me. And quite frankly, they didn't put me out. They just gave some drug to me. But you know what? I really thought that when I went in there, that was it. I mean, I thought when I came out, they were going to tell me I had cancer. I was done. Done. And, you know, when you get to feel that, you understand that all these things that you think are so important really pale in comparison to what it's like to face that, you know, health crisis. And all of us are going to come up with those at some time in our life if you live long enough. So, you know, that it's a really tough question. I don't even know how to answer that, Cedric. I just know that if you do enough introspection and you know who you are, you know, the things that I'm talking about here where time stretches out and you get to be able to be with the people you love. You know, I'll tell you one thing. If you, right now, if you ask most people, if you just go out on the street, if I walk out of the studio right now and I find somebody and corner him and I say, hey, what does it mean for you to be free? Most people are going to tell you, I want to be able to do what I want, when I want, and with whom I want. And that's what freedom is. And so, one, you've got to be in good enough health and shape that you can do that. That's the first part of it. Secondly, you have to understand the nature of time. You know, there's a dichotomy here. On the one hand, I'm saying to you, you need a stack. This is a time to work and stack. If you're young, stack like a son of a bitch, smart psychopath. But on the other hand, I'm telling you, at some point, you do need to realize that time is finite. It is measured. And everybody is going to leave here, you know, in a, either a toe tag or in a box. Everybody gets out the same way. So, you know, and that last part, the last part, with whom I want, that means that as you go through this journey, you better make sure that you don't isolate yourself, that you understand that you are part of humanity. You know, the worst punishment you can give somebody is isolation, you know, whether it's in a prison. You know, I went through a program in the Navy. It was to simulate being captured, that type of thing. And, you know, they put you in isolation. And it's a real, you get a very good feel for it. After about 12 to 18 hours, you understand that, you know, how you thought about humanity needs to probably be reevaluated. Because we are a social animal.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I mean, kind of a couple more maybe on the tougher side questions. You tweeted a video of Tom Lee from Funstrat.
Yeah.
Kind of saying how many people are not going to be happy for you as Bitcoin finally gets retail's attention somewhere north of 250K. I mean, what were you kind of getting at there?
Well, I, you know, if you listen to that clip, that's the very first time I've ever heard Tom Lee talk like that. And what he says in there is pretty impressive. I mean, he basically says, you know, I can't tell you all the times I've had hedge funders, fund managers tell me that they hated, you know, the Bitcoin success story, that, you know, these plebs or people that were into Bitcoin early and made great wealth. And there's going to be a lot of that going on. You know, there are going to be a lot of people that aren't happy for your success or your, you know, they're going to think that you were early, that you were lucky. And for us Bitcoiners, we know that's not the case. It takes real courage and conviction in order to not just get Bitcoin, but to hold on to it. If you get to a point where you can hold on to Bitcoin through one of these cycles, like the last one or the one before, you know what? That is an achievement. And there's going to be a lot of that going forward. And you know, we need to be aware of the fact that that could be, you know, that could go really ugly quick. You know, the talk about unrealized capital gains that came out before the prior election. I don't ever want to have that conversation again in this country. I hope we never see that again.
Yeah. I mean, it's you see that sort of come out in all sorts of ways, that sort of that envy or that hate, or even you that Tom Lee mentions it in simple ways, like where maybe a hedge fund manager who's looking to allocate capital, like his son or daughter does really well in Bitcoin and makes a few million, and they just hate Bitcoin, you know, because they feel like you know, their own kids they're angry at for doing well in it. So, and, you know, speaking of sort of kids, and I mean, you put out a tough tweet on Father's Day. I hate to ask almost, but, you know, this journey's tough. And, you know, so maybe what happened on Father's Day? And
yeah, that is, you know, the thing is that you know, how many times have you heard that we're like a cult, you know, a religious cult? And it's very difficult sometimes when you see something that you think can be life-altering or that can save somebody in the future, when, you know, we see the currency continue to be debased. And I'm not talking hyperinflation or the dollar doom or any of that nonsense. I'm just talking about what they're going to have to do. You know, if they're lucky here, what they're going to do is they're going to print enough money so that we're all like a little frog in the pot and we just, you know, sit there and we never jump out. That's what they really want. And if it comes to yield curve control, I mean, that they'll do what is necessary to save themselves. But we're going to really suffer through that. And, you know, if you understand all these things, and you have people that you love, it's just natural for you to try to make them see that. And it's a, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to keep yourself in check, so to speak, and realize that some people, you know, they're just not going to be able to get it. And so I'm coming to the conclusion, and have for some time, I've been working on this, is that I just need to not, what I need to do is I need to stack for other people. I need to be stacking for all my kids, all my grandkids. I need to be aware of the fact that this is generational wealth, and that I need to be the one that just carries that load and is doing what needs to be done. And I hope that someday my son will, you know, look back and he'll be proud of me. I hope someday, anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he will be. You know, I almost sometimes I've had my own journey with like orange peeling people, and you know, as much as you might want to like feel like you're giving them like a magic lamp, or you know, the three wishes, or you're showing them the future or something like that, I also have this sort of like ironic Murphy's Law where it's like, anyone I tell about Bitcoin in my personal life, I'm almost guaranteeing they will never buy Bitcoin. It's just, and it's just like, you know, whether it's like, your older brother syndrome, and older brothers don't listen to younger brothers, you know, or younger brothers don't want to listen to older brothers, or you're not going to take financial advice from your cousin, you know, and then there's a lot of, you know, when you first tell people about it, like they want to see you prove it. And then by the time they come around and double check and triple check and remember the price and see that price has gone up a lot, now they're trading against you. And so now they're saying, oh, I missed it. And, I don't know how much this person has, but I can only imagine it's more than I would reallocate or allocate to this thing. So I'd rather find something else or just root against them, because I don't want them to be right. I don't, if they're right and I get on board, then they'll always be ahead of me. And I don't want to live in a world where cousin to, you know, Cedric is ahead of me in life. And this is the Bitcoin Tina thing, like people, you know, in that case, you realize they're not trading against their future selves. They're trading against you, or in that case, their prior self. You know, and it's a mirror. It's, you know, and unfortunately, Bitcoin acts like a scoreboard in a weird way, because then it's like, well, don't you see him right? Look at the price; it's up. And then how do I know it's going to stay up? It's volatile. How do I know now is when, you know? And they haven't done the knowledge or the work, and that's what's frustrating too. Is first couple of times you touch them, you say, hey, I don't really need you to buy or want you to buy, and it's not, but like, why don't you look into it? Because a lot of times they dismiss it right away, and then because they might not feel like, if they like it, maybe they at that moment don't have any money for it, right? They are grinding and they're not thinking $10 a day or a week is going to work. But if they read the book or the podcast you send them, maybe when they get that $4,000 check in 9 months, they'll think to buy Bitcoin. But they don't, of course, because I don't know, it's very difficult. So sometimes you just maybe say, probably not for you, you know. And I'm joking, but, you know, it's hard. But, you know, you went on to write in a tweet, I'm not going to be here much longer, not just on X, but I can see the end of my blockchain coming. My last block, my last breath. Not at all afraid or sad. I've lived a life right out of a men's action novel, but I am desperate to get my message to you. It is why I'm doing podcasts lately. It is why I'm trying to post more. I want to have my life so that at the end of it, you look back and say, what an adventure. And you will leave those who hold you in their heart keeping your legend alive. Good luck to all of you. Keep stacking. P.S. I'm standing next to a barrel of rum that a man has spent his entire life learning how to craft. He uses palm leaves and handcrafts each barrel. And then, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, that you're really a gentleman, one of the most interesting men in the world. Bitcoin needs more voices like you. This is the Sam's podcast. Sam and Sam wrote this. It's about community, building connections and friendships, and sharing the knowledge. We are very early. Eventually, the masses will come. Until then, folks like you are blazing the trail. And he's speaking about you. And he says, thank you, because you were promoting his work. And you went on to write, we are going to win. Seriously, we have to. We have to win this battle. Our kids are counting on us. So, I mean, it's obvious you take this seriously, and that, you know, you see the fight at hand. As much as you're not a doom and gloom, this is serious. So, I mean, I'll leave it to you for any, you know, sort of parting words or, you know, kind of thoughts on all of that.
But this is we are in a fight here. I mean, in the sense that, I do see the end of, you know, I just turned 70. And when you turn 70, it kind of changes things. I mean, you can see, you know, you're on the backside of this. And you know, I don't care. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I've had a great time. And, you know, I'm not trying to hang on to anything other than I just do want to see the younger people be successful. I want to see them win for a change. You know, millennials and on have just kind of gotten fucked. And I want to see that change. I'm here to see that. And I figure I have a narrow little window here to try and talk to people. You know, eventually, I mean, Cedric, when this happens, you know, you and I, we're not going to be meeting anymore on podcasts. I mean, you know, nobody goes to USD conferences or has a podcast about the dollar this week. How's it doing? You know, well, some do, but they're definitely not going to be us. And, you know, you just... Again, there is a very narrow window here, an opportunity. And I just want people to understand, to see that. I don't need anything else in life. I don't need any more Bitcoin right now. I you know, that's one thing I have. And you touched on this a minute ago, and it's something to think about, too, if you're really stacking and working hard and stuff. You know, at some point, I hope that you'll get to a place where you think, I have enough. You know, that's something I have that Sailor, he'll never have. He'll never, ever have that feeling of just having enough. It's almost like that story between Heller and the other famous author. I can't remember his name on Long Island at that one hedge fund party. You know, it's kind of a famous story because the one author, he had written Catch-22. I mean, that's a pretty incredible book, very successful. But his buddy there said, hey, you know, doesn't it bother you that hedge fund guy there, he's going to make more money probably this week than you will make from all your royalties? And Heller said, I've got something he'll never have. I have enough. I hope that someday, you know, people will get to a point where they'll look and they'll say, you know what, it is time that I do need to start living my life, giving, you know, back to other people. And, you know, Bitcoin is not everything. You know, at the end of the day, when you look in that mirror, or in the morning when you shave, for me anyway, you know, I like to think I have four things that I try to live by, and that's honor, integrity, strength, and then kindness. And I kind of fuck up the kindness part more than anything else. But, I mean, I want to be able to feel good about myself at the end of this journey. When that end of the blockchain comes up, I want to feel good about it. And that part of that is, you know, stacking, like I said, for others. And, you know, if I'm right about this, there are people that you know right now, and maybe yourself. I mean, there's going to be generational wealth changes that we have never seen before in wealth. And, you know, you've got to do something with that. Again, there's got to be something more than just, you know, buying Lambos. And you better find out what that is for yourself, because at the end of your life, you know, when it does come, if you have a moment, just a moment to think back, you're gonna be having some insights probably that you never did during that journey.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I never really even talk to my kids about Bitcoin. I do maybe talk to them and joke around a lot about maybe how inflation and taxes are ripoff. And usually I do that with, you know, I just kind of steal some of their dessert and call it a daddy tax. You know, I really focus on with them kindness, caring, generosity, focus, energy, effort, sort of what you were saying there. You went on to tweet, life is as good as you let it be. Stop arguing on X. Don't buy into the right versus left tribal warfare rhetoric. You are a Bitcoiner. You have won the war. Be a magnanimous victor. George the artist seen with full Bitcoin bags, bourbon, and ice cream.
Ice cream. I do remember that. Yeah, I know. That's that. Yeah, that's a great photo. You know, the thing is that, you know, when I say kindness, you know, that is probably one of my biggest failings. You know, I've really gotten embroiled in this op return controversy right now, and I'm running, I've got my own node, and I run knots instead of core. And, you know, when I was over in Prague, I did a podcast, and I was really pissed at core. They had come up with a couple of tweets, and I thought, man, I've had it. You know, these people, this is my future, my wealth. It's my kids' wealth. They're dicking around with it here, and it's pissing me off. And, you know, I let that come through on the podcast. And then the next day I had another podcast, and I just had to say, I'm sorry. You know, I don't want to get into that type of conflict. You know, there's a great saying there, never wrestle with pigs, you know, that because you both get dirty and the pig likes it. And I don't want to get down in there. I this is a controversy that needs to be discussed and resolved. It's a much deeper issue. I actually had a chance to ask Saylor about it at a small gathering, like maybe 100, 150 people. And I stood up and I asked him, I said, I need you to opine on this, is the word I used. I want to know what your thoughts are on this. I can't really get into that right now because they're going to release that pretty soon, that and the question and stuff, and it'll come out there. I mean, he had some good points, though, but that is something that Bitcoiners need to be aware of right now, that issue that I'm discussing.
Yeah, I'm kind of pro-knots. But in terms of the arguing, I kind of agree with you. I like the way Jay-Z puts it, where it's like, don't ever argue with fools, because from a distance, people can't really tell who is who.
I love that. I love that, Cedric.
George, this has been fascinating. It's been so dope. I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show. I'll leave it to you for any final words. Let people know where they can find you and your work.
You and me, Cedric, we're in this together. I mean, we really are. We are brothers in arms here, and all of us are. I mean, you know, most of the Bitcoiners you meet, they're people like us. I mean, they're morally, ethically aligned with good values, hard workers. You know, that's one of the things that's going to be so fun to watch the success, is because, you know, these are good people. And, if I'm going to leave anything with people, it's just, again, you know, keep stacking. How's that go again? Stay humble, stack sats. I don't know if you can say anything much better than that, other than the fact that I really appreciate your, you know, talking to me and stuff. And I've actually enjoyed this. It's been one of my more, you know, it's been a very different kind of a conversation. And I kind of appreciate that. It's made me think a little bit more than just kind of the standard stuff. You know, I can talk about, you know, the difficulty adjustment and where we are right now with the ETFs and all these different facts that, you know, you can throw out. But sometimes it's kind of important to just focus on what this journey is really about. And this is a journey in life, too. You're not just stacking Bitcoin. You're on a journey through life. Yeah, someday you'll be me.
I would love that. We could all try to be George one day.
Well,
thank you so much.
I don't want to say that. What I mean is, someday you'll be old like me, and you know you'll be looking back on your life, and you want to be in a good place.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I meant. We could all only hope. So yeah. Thank you so much. It's been incredible.
You bet, Cedric. You have a nice night, buddy.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Bitcoin Matrix. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to like, subscribe, and drop a comment below with any questions or thoughts you may have. We'd love to hear from you. You can support the show by checking out our sponsors and affiliate links in the description. It helps keep bringing you great content while connecting you with awesome products that I believe in. Share this episode with your friends, family, or anyone curious about Bitcoin. And let's keep growing this community together. Stay curious, keep stacking, and I'll catch you in the next one.